County cricket, international cricket, test cricket, franchise cricket, red ball, white ball, 100 ball cricket. At The Cricketer, we care about the cricket you love. And that's why we've launched a brand new app built for fans of the English game. Download The Cricketer app and sign up to our Access All Areas Pass to receive agenda-setting journalism and illuminating storytelling straight to your phone. The latest news from the England camps, a dedicated daily service for fans of the 18 first-class counties, and committed coverage of women's cricket. Download the app today and enjoy 1 month of free unlimited access. The Cricketer. We care about the cricket you love.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my right for tonight's special episode of the County Cricket Podcast is none other than my Lancastrian co-host, Joe Nutsy Nuttall. Joe, it has been far too long. Is this your first podcast appearance of 2022, if I'm not mistaken?
I think it is. I'm pretty sure.
It is, yeah. How has your day been so far? And your year, I suppose, Joe. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has. It's only been 20 days of 2022, so not really done much, to be fair. Rested, I suppose. Though not really much rested. To rest for after Christmas, but yeah. No, obviously I've done nothing.
Well, I'll tell you something that we've all been doing over the course of last month or so, and that involves the Ashes, which is, of course, the main topic for tonight's podcast. We had to do a special for this episode, and there's a lot to unpack. So we don't know how long this episode is going to be, to be honest. It depends how much we agree or disagree with one another on tonight's podcast. But just in terms of the results from this series, I think it's pretty common knowledge now that England had a bit of a terrible time down in Australia, to put it quite nicely. 4-0, Australia absolutely dispatched the Three Lions and a Crown, winning by 9 wickets in the series opener at the Gabba, winning by 275 runs in the day-night test in Adelaide. Australia also won by an innings and 14 runs in the third test, the Boxing Day test, at the MCG in Melbourne. And then somehow, as a result of Johnny Bairstow's remarkable century, England looked as though they'd clawed back some pride, they'd salvaged something in this series, with a gritty, hard-fought, rain-affected draw at the Sydney Cricket Ground. But then in Hobart, on a green seamer at the Blundstone Arena, everything collapsed yet again. England lost by 146 runs. So the final result of the series, 4-0 Australia, it was an incredibly one-sided series. Joe, in your opinion, is this the most one-sided series you've ever seen in the Ashes? I mean, we haven't been watching the Ashes, obviously, since the 90s or the early 2000s, but other than 2013, this was a lot worse than 2017-18.
100%, and I would argue maybe worse than 2013 as well. Obviously, there was a lot of off-the-field stuff going on in this series with COVID and all that kind of thing, bubbles and everything. But I just think, at least in 2013, the players seemed to put up a fight, or more of a fight. And in this series, it kind of just felt like once Root was out and once Stokes was out and once Bairstow was out, that was kind of it. Especially Root, of course. But yeah, Stokes and Bairstow, and Milan as well for a bit of resistance, but he drops off a lot towards the end of the series. So it kind of felt, other than Root, Stokes and Bairstow, nobody really kind of, certainly the batters kind of stood up, really. And Zach Crawley, I know, got 70, but aside from that, didn't really get anything. And it was just so patchy. And that's not to say nobody cared, because of course, everybody would have cared. You're going to play an Ashes series for England. But I just think that when you're losing 4-0 like that, and they could have easily lost 5-0 because they only just saved the test in Sydney. So, they could have easily lost 5-0, and it was really, really frustrating, to be honest.
Yeah, it was a tough watch, to be honest, for us as England fans. I had to cover it as well on my local radio station, BBC Coventry in Warwickshire. So, first of all, thank you to BBC CWR for the opportunity, but that was tough. That was genuinely tough every single morning, staying up throughout the night or getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and having to watch just capitulation after capitulation, in particular in the first innings with the bat. It was really difficult to watch. And obviously, we have to give Australia their due plaudits. They were absolutely outstanding, far more clinical, far more ruthless, and worthy winners of this series in every single sense of the word. But the manner in which England lost these games, the fact that England did not score 300 plus in a single innings in this entire series, a five-match series, so 10 innings, and we didn't reach 300 once, says a lot about the issues involved with this current side. And to be honest, there's no easy fix. There's no short-term solution. This is not like 2015 with the white ball stuff, where we had players readily available, ones who could come in and take up the mantle straight away and, you know, almost catalyse the white ball revolution in this country. We don't have that in the Red Bull arena at the moment. It's something which we may have in the future, but immediately the options seem to be a lot more limited, and we'll discuss the reasons why that is throughout today's podcast. But Joe, in terms of the series itself, what were your overarching thoughts? I know that you like Australia as a team, which is a little bit strange as an English.
I like their players. All right, I think they're great. I think every single one of those Australia players are top players, and all of them have shown why they should be playing Test cricket. So yeah, that is more my take on Australia rather than I like Australia.
Yeah, but come on, you do like some of them a lot.
Who can't like Marnus?
Exactly. We all like Marnus here on the podcast. Exactly. Marnus is an absolute gem. And did you see the Instagram post as well? He put up on Instagram, Twitter, like thanking England for coming, about the families and stuff. The guy is pure class and he loves his cricket. And again, we're not going to, you know, say anything bad about Marnus because he's lovely and he's exactly what cricket needs. You need a badger like that in the game. But in terms of the overall thoughts, Joe, what did you make of the series? If we're looking at both an Australian and an English perspective, how would you summarise the events that we've seen over the course of the last month or so?
Well, I think, as you said before, it's so one-sided. And to be honest, it just looked easy for Australia. Like, other than maybe a couple of times, England didn't... when Australia was 12 for 3, it was, wasn't it? In that last test, you know, Australia didn't really seem that under pressure. I know England didn't bowl that badly, but they also didn't bowl Australia out for super low scores more than, what, twice? I think they bowled them out for less than 200. So... I just think it was easy for Australia. I really do. And I think most test sides playing against, if they were in Australia's position, would have won that series comfortably, because it was just not good enough by England at all. And, you know, as I said, there didn't really seem to be any resistance with the bat aside from Root, Bairstow, and then on occasions Stokes, Crawley and Milan. But even those three didn't really... you know, kick on. I mean, Stokes obviously again has had a lot going on this year or last year, and at the start of this year as well. So, as I say, it's not necessarily making excuses, but you have to take that into consideration for sure. And with the ball, I just think England were, aside from Anderson, I think England weren't really again at the races at all, and broad ball well as well at times. But I just don't think England were. Oh, Mark Wood took a 6 foot. But aside from those three, you'd expect they're England's three most experienced bowlers in that squad, or three of the most experienced bowlers. And aside from that, nobody really was at the races. You know, should Don Best have been given a test? Potentially. Should Overton have played? Potentially. Because, yes. I mean, he's been so good for Somerset these past, two, three seasons now, and beyond, of course, but especially these past two, three seasons. So should he have played? Maybe. You know, John Lewis said all this stuff about Ollie Robinson not being fit enough to play Test cricket. So why is he playing Test cricket? You know, you wouldn't, if someone was injured, Stokes had a broken finger last summer, so he didn't play. Of course, had other stuff going on, but that was one of the reasons why he didn't play. You know, if Robinson had broken his leg, then he wouldn't have played, of course. So if he's not fit enough to play Test cricket, then he shouldn't be playing. But I must say, I do think he's a class bowler, by the way. I must say that, but... we don't know what happens, you know, in terms of like fitness testing and everything pre-Ashes. So who knows about that? But like I say, I think England were always set up to fail, really. Sending folks home, you know, Sam Billings kept really well, batted okay, especially in the first innings, didn't really do well in the second innings. So is he England's best keeper? Is Josh Butler England's best keeper? Is there someone else? Maybe Johnny Bairstow takes the gloves since he's scoring runs. Maybe he doesn't. There's so many questions. But yeah, one thing I will say is there's probably four or five of those players in that squad who you think are nailed on to play a part this summer. You know, Root, Stokes, Bairstow, Broad and Anderson. And aside from that, I think it's anybody's game. I honestly do. And probably Wood as well. So aside from those six, I think anybody, like there's spots up to grabs.
I would add one more name, purely because you said this home summer. I think for an away test, it'd be different. But because of his tremendous record at home, I would argue for Chris Wokes' selection. You can shake your head, Joe. He has got some of the best averages in that England side. What do you mean you disagree? The guy averages 11 with the ball at Lords. There's only one ground in this country. There's one ground in this country where Chris Wokes averages more than 30 with the ball, and that's Trent Bridge. Every other ground, he averages less than 30. He is one of England's best bowlers in home conditions. How is that even up for arguments? He is a shoo-in for the home summer.
I wouldn't say he's a shoo-in.
How is he not a shoo-in?
Because, like, okay, so, I mean, you made the point about, I know you've made this, like, a few occasions on social media and stuff, like, Wokes with the bat, for example, has done really well. And he has. I think Chris Wokes is a class bowler. During that World Cup, Wokes and Archer were lethal as an opening pair. They really were. And I don't know, for me, Wokes feels like the kind of bowler who has too many off days, you know. And he was not good enough in this series. He was not. But if you're looking at all together, we're looking at all together here. And I take your point, he's very good in England, or exceptional at Lords. And as I say, I'm a massive fan. I think he's a great player.
Joe, give me an example then. You've said too many off days. We've just had this Ashes series. And again, if I'm being realistic, Chris, by his own admission, did not have a good series. However, you've just mentioned he has too many off days. When has he had an off day in English conditions?
But I'm talking about overall.
But we're talking about a home summer. List examples.
Yeah,
Chris Wokes has too many off days.
I'm talking
days
about overall. Like, in this Ashes series.
That's an Ashes series where none of the bowlers, bar Anderson and Wood, and Broad at times, have delivered.
But that's what I'm saying. Wokes is England's third most experienced bowler.
An incredible home record, which is right up there.
I just don't think he starts every test. I just don't think he does.
We're going to have to disagree there, Joe.
I think it's a decent, interesting debate, though. Like, for me, there are bowlers who I would rather... The way Australia did it. Okay, I think Australia were really, really clever with how they picked Scott Boland, for example. He played, he's obviously made his debut at the MCG, that's his home ground, bowled phenomenally well. And then the last test was at his home Big Bash ground, which, again, he's played there quite a lot. And I know it's a different format, but even so, the crowd gets behind him. England kind of don't really seem to have any pattern with how they pick fast balls. This is kind of going away from the Wokes point a little bit here. I know, but England don't really have a pattern of, like, I mean, think of a bowler. Like, think of a good, let's say Saqib Mahmood, just take him as an example, right? Saqib Mahmood, he knows how to bowl at Old Trafford and it's his home ground. The crowd's going to get behind him. If England were to give Saqib Mahmood his test debut in the summer, then they have a big pool of fast bowlers. Maybe it makes sense to do how Australia did it with Boland. Again, they used Jai Richardson so well and he bowled so well. And then he's so good with the pink ball. And then he didn't even get back in the team. And that shows how good Australia's bowling kind of unit is, really. And England have that kind of like level. They have genuine fast bowlers, Mahmood, Wood, Stone and Archer being like the main four off the top of my head. They knew Stone and Archer weren't going to be fit. Like, they knew Archer wasn't going to be fit at the start of the year. So why on earth did they only take Wood as a genuine fast bowler? I've really gone away from the Wokes point here. I know that. But
we'll come back onto it.
Why would they only take Mark Wood? What if Mark Wood had, in the first ball, gone over and you know, broke his ankle or something like that? What, anything could have happened. And then they've got four bowlers, or three, depending on if you play Leach, who all bowl like a similar style. And then the fastest there probably would have been Broad. And Broad bowls, mid-130s? So, and Broad used to be quite quick, but he's not anymore. So, for me, that was negligent, I think.
It was an oversight, wasn't it? Sure. In hindsight, and obviously hindsight's 2020, someone like Saqib Mahmood probably should have been in that squad. I'm not going to let that Chris Wokes point go. We'll pick that up in due course. But while we're on the topic of the squad, I want to look at a quote. This was from Joe Root. I'm pretty sure it was at the end of the Melbourne test, so the third test, the Boxing Day test, when England had lost the series. It was an unassailable 3-0 lead. In an interview, he said that squad was the best available in county cricket, and that divided a lot of opinion. Again, I wouldn't agree with that. I think that there were players that were not selected. There were players in the Lions. In the Lions tour, exactly, who would have been better set up to appear in that series. So in terms of the squad, Joe, and obviously in hindsight, it's very easy for us to say this now, but who would you have added into that squad if you had the choice?
Well, firstly, I would have added Ben Foulkes because I think he's England's best keeper batsman. I think Johnny Best, I mean, everybody knows how much I'm a fan of Johnny Best, so I am. For me, he's best for England when he, well, as he showed in this series, when he's only a batter. Because also, he's an incredible fielder. I'm not too sure if Josh Butler has much of a future in Test cricket. One of my favourite players ever in white ball cricket. But does he have a future in Test cricket? I'm not sure. You know, he's not really. When was the last time he scored 100? Was it?
Well, he had that good knock against Pakistan. In
he
fairness,
did. But again, that was but he's had a whole summer since then and a whole winter. I know he missed the last Test, but he's had, well, how many? Three series or four series since then. So you know, I'm not sure if he's necessarily the guy to keep for England. Maybe it's best for England to prioritise white ball cricket with Butler. So yeah, I would have added Foulkes for sure. I would have added Josh Bohannon without a doubt. He's class. There's no two ways about it. He's really good. Kind of gives me like Trot vibes a little bit, batting three. I mean, he's such a calm head at the crease, and even the way he bats is a little bit similar to Trot, I would argue. So yeah, I think Bohannon, for sure, I would have taken him, and then I would have taken Matt Parkinson because he's the best English spinner for me, without a doubt. He's clear of anybody. And I would have taken, as I said, Sakib Mahmood. And I mean, I can list more players who I think would have been. Like, I know David Malan got a load of runs in the first Test, but after that, he didn't really do anything. If England had had, let's say, I think someone off the top of my head, I don't know. Name me a top quality red ball batter.
Tom Abel.
There you go. Okay, there, perfect. If England had Tom Abel to come into that side, in the squad, would he have come into the side ahead of Milan?
But I don't know with Dawid.
Milan is, you know, he's a bit similar to Denley in a way that it's such a short-term fix. And I disagreed with Silverwood when he said he's not going to give anyone any debuts on this. So I just think that, where's the logic behind that? I know I just talked about, you know, Sakib Mahmood maybe debuting at Old Trafford, but that was more of a thought for the summer. I don't see the logic of, if you have Matt Parkinson available, who, as I say, I think is the best English spinner in all three forms, excluding Rashid, that is. I forgot about Rashid there. The best uncapped Test spinner, or red ball spinner, in my opinion. Why would you not play him? You know, why? And Nathan Lyon didn't do a whole lot. He didn't even bowl in the last Test, I'm pretty sure. But
no, he didn't. In fact, that's just a great stat about that, Joe. Sorry, just to butt in. Fourth time in 104 career matches that he's not bowled a single ball in a Test match.
Yeah, see, that's mad. Like, and I know, obviously, like, Leach wasn't really the series Leach was hoping for. So, as I said, maybe Don Best should have played. I don't think Don Best is quite there yet, but he's an exceptional bowler. I think he needs a couple more, maybe one, two more seasons. I think he's going to become more like a Swan in that kind of, he matures at the age of, 28, whatever Swan was when he debuted, and played for a few years. I think that's kind of going to be more how Don Best kind of goes. So, yeah, I mean, honestly, there's a lot of changes. I'm realising quite a few of these with the Lions changes. I am now realising that. But there was a lot of changes that I would have made to that squad. I wouldn't have picked a lot of those players, or at least I would have added to the squad. Yeah, for sure.
Well, you see, I would agree with that. The only problem here is that I suppose it wasn't normal circumstances, and this was actually brought up on numerous occasions on social media, in the written media as well, about the Lions. You couldn't really keep them in Australia for weeks and weeks afterwards in those biosecure bubbles and not allow them to go home to their families for Christmas when you've told them you're only going to be there for a couple of weeks. So I can understand that completely.
Of course, yeah,
maybe,
of course.
Again, in retrospect, maybe it would have been better to add them.
Yeah,
exactly.
I think, and especially maybe, if you do well in the Lions. Like, as I keep bringing it back to Bohannon. Bracey's another one, actually. I completely forgot about him. Bracey got 100.
Century.
Yeah, exactly. And as you say, there's a lot of pressure to kind of come into the Test side. Your family's not there. You're thinking you can spend Christmas with them. But they could have planned for that. Yeah, he could have said, look, if you do well, we're going to move you up to the test side. Bracey could have batted three. Bracey could have batted, well, he could have opened.
Really, only problem with that, though, Joe, again, there's no guarantees. And if they weren't to play, that would be incredibly harsh. So I can see both sides of the argument there.
Of course, it's a double-edged sword. It's very much a double-edged sword. So, yeah.
It is indeed. But again, just that comment that I don't think that was the best squad to go to Australia. And in fact, if you think back to 2020, I'm going to bring this up, and someone who I'm really surprised didn't play a single game in this series was Dan Lawrence. Dan Lawrence was part of the England Lions tour.
Yeah.
Exactly. He was part of the England Lions tour, which came to Australia in 2020 in January. They played a game against Australia A, which had Michael Nisa in it, funnily enough. Day-night test match at the MCG, and the England Lions won. And that was massively, in huge part, due to Dan Lawrence scoring a century. I think he scored 116 runs. And Dom Sibley, someone who we do mention a lot on the podcast, and someone who I think will be back in 2022, and certainly hope that he's back in an England test shirt and treated better, as we'll discuss in due course. But he also scored a century in that match. Sibley wasn't selected in the squad, albeit due to a poor run of games in 2021. But Dan Lawrence, what did he do wrong?
Experience.
Exactly. And the Lions tour.
Exactly. So he's had, like, well, at least two, the Big Bash in a series, but let's call it a series, at least two series worth of cricket in Australia. And I don't know if this for a fact, but for all we know, you could have gone and played club cricket in Australia as well, as some younger players do. So, I completely forgot he was even in the squad. And maybe he could have come into the side. The issue is England don't like to drop their favourites. That's what I always think. And it's almost like they have a group of players who are seemingly undroppable. Broad and Anderson were in that. And I think that's kind of changed now, because they obviously have to be managed better. But yeah, I think England don't like to drop their favourites. Butler would have played in that last test if he hadn't been injured. So that would have been the incorrect choice. That's a fact. Butler did not score many runs. I know he scored that, whatever it was, off 200 odd balls. It was in Adelaide, wasn't it?
It was a good knock, that. We do have to give that, due
part. Of course, 100%. It was a really good knock. But that's
Sydney
not
as well, Joe.
And Sydney, yeah. But
he did have a couple of battling knocks.
When Josh Butler came into the side, I think way back in whatever year against India, I think everybody kind of envisaged him as that kind of Adam Gilchrist kind of player, at number seven. And he's never really kicked on for me. And as I said before, I'm a massive fan of him. But realistically, did he deserve to be in the side by the end of that series? Because scoring two decent knocks in two innings of a five-match series is not good enough if you're playing Test cricket for England. Factually, that is the case. And as I say, so much has been going on this year, so much, on and off the pitch. And I'm not, the players have done, as pretty much as Marner said, the England players, to even just go over there and, again, spend time away from their family, extended family at Christmas and everything, everybody in England is really appreciative of that. But this is purely on the cricket side of things. And it's so hard to kind of say this, at least for me anyway, because it does feel like I'm kind of criticising them and their commitment. But yeah, I personally, that's what I believe. So I'm not going to lie. But yeah, as I say, all the England players and everything, I have huge respect for every single one of them, the coaching staff and the families and everything. It must have been extremely tough, especially to, when the cricket is like that, it must have been so, so tough.
Oh, 100%. And in Ashes series, as we know, in normal circumstances, so demanding, both physically and mentally. And when you have got a team like Australia, which is so clinical, so ruthless, they will run you into the ground. They will spot your weaknesses and exploit them straight away. They're an incredibly dangerous unit at home. It was just relentless. And you could just see, as soon as we lost to the Gabba, it was like dominoes. Then they just fell step after step after step. And we got it back slightly at the Sydney Cricket Ground. We did. And again, I appreciate the fight in particular from the likes of 100%. Johnny Bairstow and Joss.
100%.
But this series, for the most part, was incredibly one-sided. And you could just see there was a massive, massive toll on the players as it played out. By the end of that day three in Hobart, you could just tell they wanted to go home. They've not had an enjoyable experience at all. And again, we are appreciative of that. We understand that. We can't quite fully empathize with it because we aren't living life in biosecure bubbles, particularly not back here in England. Let's face it, over December and January, we've been living a relatively normal life. It's still not, you know, normal compared to a few years ago, but it's a lot more normal than what these lads have had to go through in Australia. So we can definitely sympathise with that. And again, this is just from a cricketing perspective, because you mentioned the likes of Dawid Malanjo. Milan in those first two test matches was outstanding, and the performances did begin to dip as the series went on. But again, there is a little bit of a mitigating factor there. His wife was, you know...
Of course.
She's just given birth to their child, so exactly. Congratulations.
And that must be so hard to know that you've missed the birth child. Like, that must be such a hard thing to be able to have to come to terms with. So, yeah, as you say, congratulations to the Milan family.
To the Milan family, exactly.
That's quality. It's incredible, but it must be so hard for him. And as I say, like, this is what I find tough, is, like, I feel like I'm criticising them as human beings, and I'm not. We're here to discuss the cricket, and, you know, I don't want to seem like we're being too harsh on anybody, or like we're criticising them as people, or, you know, maybe like undermining like their feelings or maybe something about their mental health, because that's not the case. And as I say, it must be extremely tough. We will never know, unfortunately, the feeling of representing England in an Ashes series. But maybe one day, you never know. Must be nice.
Hopefully for English cricket, we never debut for the Three Lions and a Crown. In particular me, if I'm debuting for England, my goodness, we are in a lot of trouble. I'd struggle to get into Warwickshire's 10th 11, let alone the English first 11 in an Ashes series. My goodness, we will have fell off if that ever happens. But no, Joe, I completely echo those words. And again, this is purely from a cricketing perspective, but these conversations do need to be had. We need to have these honest, open conversations. There's no point lying about it. There's no point, you know, glossing over these issues. These issues are here. They presented themselves. And this is not just for the Ashes. I feel like a lot of the reaction, which we'll get into in due course, has been very reactionary. It's been almost a very knee-jerk reaction. We've lost the Ashes and all of a sudden everything's gone to pot. And that isn't the case at all. But this has been happening over the course of a year now. And questions need to be asked, because this is not good enough from this English side, considering the talent that's there. And people will say, oh, they're rubbish cricketers, this, that, the other. We know they're not rubbish cricketers. We see them week in, week out. A number of these guys in county cricket, and they perform. They have got the temperament. They've got the mentality. But in this tour, in the India series at home, in the New Zealand series, and the India tour beforehand, things have not gone to plan. So questions need to be answered. And talking of those questions, Joe, this brings me nicely onto the main segment of tonight's podcast, which is a rather prevalent and pushing question. Where did it go wrong for England? This is such a subjective question. There are so many different factors, so many different layers and things that play.
There's not really a right
different
answer.
Forces. There isn't. And that's a key thing for anyone listening to this podcast. We all have our different opinions. We all do. We're an incredibly subjective sport. Well, not just that, Joe, but I'm on about other people as well. You know, when we're interacting with other cricket fans, whether that is on Twitter, whether that's at ground, whether that's in any form of life, right? You have to be respectful of other people's opinions. Cricket and sport in general is based off of opinion. And no one has ever got the definitive right answer. And that's why there was a perfect storm of factors when it came to this series. You see on social media and people will scapegoat a particular player. I've seen so many people hammering the likes of Chris Wokes, hammering the likes of Haseeb Hameed and Rory Burns and Ollie Pope. They've hammered Chris Silverwood, hammering Joe Root for his captaincy, Jack Leach for not performing as a spin bowler. You know, they've looked at the likes of Ashley Giles. Is his position now untenable? They've questioned the likes of Graham Thorpe. But you have to understand, it's not just an individual. This is a team sport with a management group. And let's not forget as well, we do have a board, which is just as much to blame as this group of individuals have made the tour to Australia. They have not made things easy for them at all in the last few years. You can even extend this back to a course of 7 to 10 years when it comes to Red Bull cricket in this country. So with all of that in mind, Joe, where do you think it went wrong for England in terms of these different factors, in terms of these different forces at play? Why do you think the performances were just so poor from the Three Lions?
Yes, obviously we don't see anything internally. Nobody does. But just, I think the first mistake, and I think this was Giles whose decision this was to allow Root and Silverwood exclusively to half selection. No national cricket team in the world has this system in place. Nobody ever has, as far as I know, certainly in the recent years. So to think this was a good idea, to get two people's opinions who might be biased, we don't know that, they might have mates, people who they don't like, I don't think that's the case, but they still might be biased in some way. So to have that kind of like closed-minded almost, or, you know, yeah, that's probably the right phrase, closed-minded kind of selection. A selection committee should be 4, 5, 6 of the best of the best. Alistair Cook should be on the selection committee. He's England's greatest ever batter. When he retires, whenever that is, Jimmy Anderson should be on the selection committee. You know, there's loads and loads of people who should be in the committee. And to have the coach and the captain picking the team only is, for me, really, really like naive. And again, it's not necessarily Silverwood's fault. Well, it's not Silverwood's fault and Root's fault. They probably didn't choose for it to be like that. But it's good to have diversity. It always is. And I think that's probably the first big mistake that England made.
Fair enough, Joe. But again, first mistake, it's certainly not the only one. And again, no. We see a lot of questions being aimed at Joe Root's. We'll start with Root and then we'll go on to Silverwood, because these are two individuals who have had it very, very difficult in this series. They've had a lot of questions from the press, lots of interviews to answer for as well. We'll start with the captain, Joe Root. And I suppose this also leads into the future, Joe. Do you see Joe Root as England's long-term captain? When you take into consideration the last year or so, and you can take into consideration 2020 again, if we're being fair, Joe Root was the captain of that side which won in South Africa, which beat Pakistan at home, which beat the West Indies at home convincingly as well.
Exactly,
and we still have the Moose Cup, which is something the Australians don't have, so silver linings, I suppose. We have got the Moose Cup powered by De Raz with its little antlers. But at the same time, if we're going back to being serious now, this England side, let's be honest, since Silverwood took over and as Joe Root has been captain of this side, do you think they've improved? And again, do you think he's the right man going forward to be the captain of the England men's test cricket team?
I think Root will be the captain in the West Indies, because I think he will be the captain for this summer for two reasons. One, he wants to do it, but he's hungry to do it, and that's always a good place to start. If you don't want to do it anymore, then don't do it. It's as simple as that. And Root does. So, you know, for two reasons. One, for your own personal like mental health and everything like that. And two, for the cricket. They're the two reasons. If you don't want to do it, there's no point. And, you know, but Root still wants to do it, so fair enough. In my opinion, he should be the captain for the West Indies tour, but who else would do it? I don't see Stokes as the long-term successor. For me, Stokes, a bit like Flintoff, that kind of thing. You know, when Flintoff took over the captaincy, his personal performances kind of dropped a little bit, and it wasn't the best period of time for England, let's be honest. So for me, Stokes is better just being Ben Stokes, the all-rounder, rather than Ben Stokes, the captain. He's had one test as captain and he lost it. Which, you know, track record doesn't speak so well for him. It's one test, obviously, but
yes, small sample size.
Of course, yeah, but even so, he's still got that to go off, right? But having said that, he did win a three-match ODI series against a really good Pakistan team with a England Lions team, basically, or they were classed as an England
with
Lions
a team of county cricketers, which apparently, according to a lot of people, is terrible, but we'll get into that in due course. Carry on, Joe.
I mean, for me, Joe Root should be the captain for the West Indies, as I say. Should he be the captain for beyond maybe this summer or maybe into 2023? Probably not. If England kind of keep going, you know, like progressively worse, getting progressively worse. That's the issue. I don't know who would become the captain. I really don't.
That is a great point, because I would agree. I think he's going to be the captain for the West Indies tour, potentially for the home summer as well, but I think it's out of necessity as opposed to want. I think England right now, if we did have another strong leadership candidate, I think that we probably would have explored it by now.
You could give it to Broad.
But the problem with Broad, he's not a regular, you know, he's not a regular option anymore, is he? As we've seen, he's not being selected game in, game out.
So Broad's probably off the table. But as I say, I don't think Stokes is an option. Rory Burns has won the County Championship. He would, maybe 2 years ago when I was, you know, there wasn't discussion about Giroud leaving, but there was certainly like, who would be the captain if Root left? That kind of conversation that you cut, that you seem to have, just hypothetically. Rory Burns was probably one of the names who I would have suggested. But for me, he's not, he shouldn't be playing Test cricket at the moment, Rory Burns. So I'd say he's probably not an option anymore. And then, you know, kind of where do you go from there? Jimmy Anderson, I don't think would ever take that role. And plus, he's also not a regular, like you say, although he should be. So, you know, who do you give it to? That's the tricky thing. Maybe Johnny Bairstow. He was really, really good. I know we don't talk about the 100, but he was really good captain in the 100 for the Welsh Fire. So
a different format, though.
Of course, yeah, of course. But
like saying drafting Owen Morgan.
Well, that's my next thing to say. He's another option for sure. I wouldn't do it personally, but you have to explore all the options. Maybe Owen Morgan plays as best, especially captain. You've got to look at every option, honestly, right? So personally, it's not something that I would do. But for sure, you've got to consider Bairstow because, as I say, he's done so well. Josh Butler's another one. He's not done very well with the bat or necessarily with the gloves, but he's a decent captain. And then from there, you're kind of running out of options and you're into your county cricketers. I'd maybe throw Zach Crawley's name out there. I know he's captain Kent, but he's probably one who the selectors would consider. But again, personally not who I would pick. So as I say, then you're into your county cricketers. So yeah, I who knows? You know, who knows from there? Maybe Alex Lees comes into the side. I've heard he may be coming into the squad for the West Indies, which I think he's a good player. And maybe he captains the side in the long run. But again,
he's not the captain for Durham though.
True, but you don't necessarily have to be the captain. Root is the Yorkshire captain, so you don't necessarily have to be your county captain to be your international captain. You know, so look at Aaron Finch. He's not the captain of the Melbourne Renegades, and he's the captain for Australia. So,
yeah, but the different format again.
It doesn't matter. It's still transferable, right? It's still transferable.
So, you just want Owen Morgan in the team, don't you?
No,
I don't. Jay Roy opening. Jason Roy opening.
Roy and Bess opening. Hey, maybe Joffre fancies doing a bit of captaincy. I'd be quite entertaining if Joffre was a captain, for sure. So
the fields would be good. They would be outstanding.
What England needs is they even need someone like a Kane Williamson, who, you know, is obviously really sick, or a Morgan.
That's a lot easier said than done.
Of course. But I'm talking about Kane. Well, they could do with Kane Williamson, the batsman as well, but also Kane Williamson, the captain. You know, someone who's so calm and kind of like, can think on his feet and kind of thing. Or, I hate this word, but I'm going to use it anyway. A maverick captain. I absolutely hate that word, but I've said it anyway now. You know, a Brendan McCullum, a Virat Kohli, who obviously is no longer India captain now. That's what England kind of need, either or. Joe Root doesn't really, to me, fit into either. Joe Root's not really very out there. You know, you see Kohli, or McCullum especially, setting the craziest fields in all forms, but especially in Test cricket, he'd set the craziest fields, whereas Williamson's very methodical, you know, thinks about it. And Williamson's, for me, the best captain in the world. In Test cricket, so one of the best ever in Test cricket. So, Joe Root doesn't, to me, fit into either of those categories necessarily. He's closer to a Williamson than a McCullum, but England don't really have anybody that comes to my mind who is that player or is that captain.
And that's the problem, isn't it? Because sure. In an ideal world, you'd have someone straight away. And I've just got a couple of things to pick up on when it comes to this particular conversation. We'll start there first and foremost with the options, because that is the question on everyone's lips. If you were to replace Joe Root, who would come in for him? You've mentioned Ben Stokes, Joe. I agree. I wouldn't see him as a captain. I'd rather just leave Ben Stokes in terms of skill set, in terms of characteristics, in terms of what he offers to the team. He is an X-factor player. Leave him as that.
As I said, is it to me just... Is exactly what happened with Flintoff way back in whatever year it was. I think that was for an Ashes tour as well, wasn't it? So, yeah, obviously, just leave Stokes, in my opinion. Just leave Stokes.
Exactly. I'd agree with that. So that rules out Ben Stokes. Rory Burns, to be honest, I think has massively fallen out of favour with England. The way in which Graham Thorpe was talking about him, that to me suggests that he will not be touring the West Indies and he probably won't be playing in the summer either. So, that rules out Rory Burns. We mentioned already about Stuart Broad. The fact is he isn't a regular fixture in the team. So that's the reason why Root, for the moment, will probably remain as the captain. again,
I don't see him as a captain, though. That's the thing.
Problem with Wood.
He can go through everybody.
Because he's a fast bowler as well. He could be prone to injury. And then again, you're left out in the dark.
So to me, if I had to choose one option in that squad, aside from Root, in the Ashes squad, 100% I would take Johnny Bairstow. 100%. Like, obviously, I would keep Root. But if I had to choose an alternative, I would 1,000% I would say Johnny Bairstow, because A, he is got himself back into the team and he's going to be a regular in that team. And B, he has shown, as you say, it's a different format, but he's still shown he has the skill set to be a captain. All right. And if you had to try anybody, for me, I would try Bairstow. I would. But again, maybe they look at bringing in a county player and leading the side. That is an exceptionally hard thing to do.
This is exactly what I wanted to ask, because this is the other argument. This is the other viewpoint. Instead of looking at from that squad, who is there in the county circuit? Because if you look at the appointments of players like Mike Brearley, that's who people are bringing into this conversation as examples of. If you were to bring someone in, Joe, because there are options, we've discussed Tom Abel already, the Somerset batsman, absolutely outstanding, classy, elegant, has this panache about him. And the thing I like about Tom Abel is he really trusts his spin bowlers, which will be the second point I get into with regards to Joe Root's in due course. But in terms of county captains, I think right now Tom Abel is probably the front runner. I also agree. Think if England were thinking outside of the box, and I know there's going to be some eye rolls for people who are regular listeners,
Warwickshire bias.
Will Rhodes genuinely could be an option.
Will Rhodes played against India, didn't he? In that, whatever that game
Yeah,
was,
the county select 11 up at Durham.
And yeah, he played in that. I mean, for Skip me, the player who springs to mind, who I think is a great captain, probably fits in the Kane Williamson bracket. He's played Test cricket before. It didn't go very well for him. But he's one of the best players to watch in the world. Do you know what I'm going to say here?
Go on.
James Vince. Just throwing that name out there.
I knew you were going to say it.
I'm just throwing that name out there. Because, as I say, James, I mean, Hampshire, again, like Hampshire are, well, they pushed Lancs and Warwickshire right up. I can't really see.
Well, they beat us.
But they pushed Lancs and Warwickshire with a side that I would say is not quite as good as Lancs, for sure. Probably better than Warwickshire, but I would say not quite as good as Lancs.
Look at the same attack. Look at the same attack.
Yeah,
Abbott, Abbas, Wheel.
No. We're not going to get into a debate about Hampshire here. I think Hampshire are a top side.
There's no debate, that's why.
I don't think they're as good as Lancs. They're better than Warwickshire, without a doubt, but they're not as good as Lancs.
Yeah, the county champions. Carry on.
So, yeah, I think for me, James Vince, if he can find kind of his form, and find his feet in Test cricket, he's a really, really good shout. The players know him as well, which helps. I think if you bring Tom Abel into that side, of course he's going to know these guys, but maybe they don't know him like they know James Vince, for example. I would heavily lean towards James Vince. If I had to just pluck someone from county cricket, he would probably be the guy. Him or Abel would be the guy. And I really do think it's a shame that Moeen Ali is no longer playing Test cricket, because I think he would have had a great series. I'm gutted that he's retired. I love Moeen Ali. He's such a nice guy. He's also a great cricketer. And obviously retired from Test cricket for his own reasons. But I do think he would be the guy who I would choose to captain England if he was still playing. I'd also like to throw Liam Livingstone's name out there. I know it's not going to be a popular choice.
As a captain?
Hey, he caps in Lancs. All right, he caps in Lancs. So you can include him.
Didn't he average like 17 in the championship?
Hey, that's all right. Doesn't matter.
Look, I love Livy. I think Livy's fantastic. He's one of the best white ball
I've only messed with that one.
Okay.
You took that way too literally.
Yeah, I know. I did. I thought you'd been serious then.
No. You took that
but
way
too
literally.
If I was to add in a left field option, and Joe, I think you know what I'm going to say here, from Gloucestershire. I've mentioned this before, and it's Chris Dent. Now, Chris Dent, and I've just mentioned an average there. He averaged 26 in 2021 in the championship for Gloss. But A, that was in a really, really hard division. Group two, in terms of the seam attacks, you had the likes of Kemar Roach and Carl Jameson for Surrey, along with their domestic seamers. You had Hampshire, who we've mentioned. You had Somerset as well, with Overton, Davy, etc., etc., Lewis Gregory as well. Chris Dent, for me, is one of the most underrated top order batsman in this country. He has a first class average of 37. And before people jump on and they say, oh, well, he's done that in Division 2. He's only scored runs in Division 2. Ben Stokes is a Division 2 cricketer. Marnus Labuschagne, the number one ranked batsman in the world, is a Division 2 cricketer, as is Jofra Archer, as is Ollie Robinson. Jimmy Anderson was. in 2019, along with Matt Parkinson and Livy and the rest of that Lancs squad, because they're in Division 2. So the fact is, no, they're not, and well done, yeah, they're competing again, but that isn't the point. We're straying off topic.
Just to get out of there.
The point is that Division 2, it's no longer a case of Division 1 is almost like the Premier League and Division 2 is almost this League 1, League 2-esque style competition. Division 2 is full of top quality international seam bowlers, and it will begin this year. Middlesex have just signed Shaheen Shah Afridi. So the fact is, Chris Stent has scored runs against these calibre of oppositions before, but the real key thing for me is his leadership. Not only was he the captain when Gloucestershire got promoted in 2019, but the dressing room environment that he has created at Gloucestershire is so, so good. Honestly, they are like an extended family, and you can just tell whenever he's out on the field, he is the one that every single one of them can trust, and he's the one that they turn to when adversity presents itself on the field. So I would also throw Chris Stent's name in there. I would want him to have a Lions tour first, or if not, at least, you know, put him in the mix in and around the squad. I'm not saying you put him in straight away by any means, but Chris Stent should have had a Lions place years ago. So I would put him as an almost outside of the box suggestion heading into the immediate future. And in terms of the second thing with regards to Joe Root's captaincy, before we go on to the coaching in this series, which again, simply not good enough, Joe Root's mismanagement of spinners. And I want to know your thoughts on this, Joe. We've seen it before. We saw it with Moeen Ali in 2019 with the Ashes, and then Moeen took a break. We saw it with Dom Bess in Ahmedabad in 2021. We're now seeing it with Jack Leach. There is a worrying pattern with Joe Root as a captain when it comes to our spin bowlers. They're not lasting very long, and their averages are getting worse and worse and worse. And I just look at this series. And yes, David Warner absolutely dispatched Leachy in that first game at the Gabba. But after that particular passage of play, throughout the rest of the series, Joe Root was far too conservative as a captain with his field placements for the spin bowlers. And no, there was nowhere that quite encaptured this more than the game in Sydney, where Nathan Lyon was bowling. And when you saw his fields, Australia would put in a short leg. They might even put in a silly point. They'd have a slip, a leg slip. They would get men surrounding the bats, putting the pressure on the English batsman at the crease. Compare this to England. Whenever a Leach was bowling, we would have men all on the field, all on the boundary rope. There'd be no one in close. They brought in Haseeb Hameed at short leg for two overs. I counted them, two overs, 12 deliveries. That's all he was there for. And then they brought in a leg slip after Australia got some momentum. So, you know, it came at the wrong time. In terms of the spin bowling, Joe, this is something which has been spoken about again and again and again. Again, if Joe Root is to be the long-term captain heading into the future, do you feel as though this could be a bit of a major weakness with regards to his captaincy style?
Yeah, 100%. Like you say, Moeen Ali, well, as I said earlier, Moeen Ali for me, if he was still around, would I think would have had a good series. I think he's a great bowler. And still will be going forward in white ball cricket for England. But the thing that worries me is England have a lot of good young spinners, especially Parkinson and Mason Crane. They're the two best, like top young spinners, both leg spinners as well, which are a bit rarer in England, of course. So they're like England's top two young spinners, in my opinion. And I'm Averdi, I was probably thrown as a third, certainly in red ball cricket. So I think it's so important for Root to kind of, or whoever's the captain, to use them well. Because, I mean, we saw what happened to Scott Borthwick, actually, in, that was Sydney, wasn't it? That test that he played. And he did not have a good test. He was picked as a bowler and did not have a good test. And never really bounced back in terms of England honours again. And, I mean, he's a class player, but never really bounced back with the ball in terms of England honours since that test. And, it was not a good test for him. Similar thing happened to Crane as well, in the where Sydney as well. I think he made a test.
It was, right? Yeah, 17-18 at the SCG.
And that was like horribly like mismanaged as well. So that's what kind of worries me, is that Parkinson and Crane and Verdi, to an extent some others, are kind of misused, mismanaged. I think, as I said earlier about Don Best, I think he's going to grow. He will kind of come into fruition later on, come into the equation later on in his career. For me, Jack Leach, I'm just not quite sure about Jack Leach. You know, I think he's been great for England, and of course the hero of the Headingley Test, or one of them anyway, of the Headingley Test. But with the ball, for me, he's just not really done enough for, you know, to be England's regular Test spinner, and especially now he's at that kind of 28, I don't know how old he is, 28, 29, 30, that kind of age, where he should be kind of hitting his peak now. And for me, he's just not quite there, and I'm not sure if he ever is going to be there. But again, I love Jolly. I think he's a class player, and you know, seems a class guy as well. But yeah, I think England really needs to choose carefully who they pick to tour the West Indies. He's going to spin out there, you know, it often does. So that's going to certainly play a part. And whether they decide to play two spinners, I don't know. Maybe they'll play, I can't think of one off the top of my head, but maybe they'll play a spinning all-rounder. Liam Livingston, for example. Maybe not him.
Darren Millan. Dom Sibley.
Maybe not either of those two. But no, seriously though, about Livingston, genuinely, he's a genuine all-rounder and could bat five or could bat six. And, you know, even just having theirs, you can bowl 10 overs in a day.
In that case, where does Stokes or Bairstow bat?
But we don't need to worry about that right now. Okay, we don't need to worry about that. I'm just throwing his name out there. I'm not picking the team for the West Indies. I'm just throwing his name out there. If they wanted a spinning all-rounder. You name me another one then.
Liam Dawson?
No. I think the ship sailed on Liam Dawson, unfortunately. I don't know. Off the top of my head, Livingston's obviously the first person who came to my mind.
Matt Critchley?
A great shout. Obviously just moved to Essex.
1,000-plus runs, 30-plus wickets in this year's championship. Just moved to Essex.
Probably a better shout than Livingston. I'll give you that. In terms of Red Bull.
Should have been in the Lions.
He should have been. And again, maybe that's another kind of thing that you can look at. I don't know who picks the Lions squads. I don't know how much of a say Silverwood has in that, but I assume it's quite a lot. We'll probably get onto that later. But I do think the Lions selection was poor. Well, not poor, but could have been better. It's probably a better phrase to use. So yeah, anyway, I think it's important for England to really think hard about, and maybe they decide to take Crane, Parkinson and Critchley or Livingston or whoever. I don't know, maybe not Livingston. I'm just going to keep saying his name and hopefully he'll get a test place. But basically, Crane, Parkinson and a spinning all-rounder, in my opinion, need to go to the West Indies and no other spinners. Maybe you take, I don't know, someone else as a backup. But it'll be interesting to see like the route that they go down, because I think that they do really need a change in the spin department. And someone needs to sit down with Joe Root, maybe Morgan, maybe someone else, Alistair Cook, and like just help him, you know, not explain it to him, because he's not stupid. He's England's best player and he's still a good captain. But, you know, kind of like guide him almost. And, you know, this is maybe like, or suggest to him, like when you could use a spinner and feels like that, because as bad of a series Leach had, he was still horribly misused, like you said. And the fields were not good to him. And it's like I said, Root played it too safe. He needs to be more of a McCullum at times. And Root played it too safe.
Do you know why? Do you know what the problem is? In terms of the mindset, I think, with English spinners, and we've seen this for years, actually. I know that Moeen was the outside option with this, as was Graham Swan, but we don't use our spin bowlers as attacking options unless they're in the subcontinent.
No, and that's just a whole thing.
Exactly. That's something I think needs to change. Look at how Australia utilised Nathan Lyon at home. He is outstanding in home conditions. And let's be honest, he doesn't do anything spectacular.
He's outstanding in England as well.
Well, he is,
but put that out there. But England spinners are not very successful in England either. Unless it's a subcontinent, England do not have recent success with spinners.
But look how they're used. And again, we'll touch upon this. I'm not just on about in the international circuit either. I'm talking about in county cricket, and we'll discuss that in a bit. I know we've almost been going on for an hour. I knew this would be a long podcast, but you just look at the way in which the spin bowlers are managed. Look at the fields that they're set. It was frustrating. It was frustrating. You know, when we're staying up, it's like 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and you're watching Jack Leach bowl to what is basically a T20 field. Men on the fence, no one in close, no short legs, no silly points, no leg slip. It's something which has got to change. If Joe Root is going to be England captain for the next few years, if he's going to lead this rebuild from the front, that'd be my advice. Change the mentality when it comes to the spin bowlers, because England will be a much better side as a result of it if we utilise our spinners in a more attacking way. But Joe, aside from Root, the other big talking point, I suppose, from the Ashes is the future of Chris Silverwood, England's head coach. And I think it's pretty safe to say there aren't many people now who see him as the option going forward. He did mention in an interview that he thinks he is the right man to lead England heading into these next few series, heading into the future. Considering the 2021 which England had, losing 3-1 against India, albeit we did beat Sri Lanka 2-0 at home, which for some reason people, you know, seem to sweep under the carpet. That was an excellent series win. Sri Lanka beat New Zealand at home in 2019, so it does have that going for him. But you think of the home summer, again against two quality sides, the best two test teams in the world, but that is the first time since 2001 that England did not win a home test series in our summer. So that is another thing which goes against him. And this Ashes series has just been a capitulation. And we talk about mismanagement of spin bowlers, Joe. It goes far beyond that, doesn't it? The management of this tour has been absolutely shoddy, to say the least. It's been really, really poor. Underwhelming. Whatever word or sentence you want to use to describe it, it simply has not been good enough. And it says it all when you're reading these articles in, I think it was the Telegraph, and Ollie Pope at one point in this series was really down, really struggling. He felt as though the England management had absolutely zero confidence, zero faith in his ability, to the point where he had to ring up Vikram Solanki and offer to fly him over to Australia to help him out in the nets. How on earth have we allowed one of our young premier talents to get to that stage? I just cannot understand it. And, you know, again, in that similar vein, I mention this all the time. I called it Vision 2023. 2019, when Silverwood took over England, and we had that brand new wave of youngsters, didn't we? We had the likes of Ollie Pope, Dan Lawrence, Dom Sibley, Zach Crawley, Dom Bess. They were the future. They were a team that we were going to build a future around. And if we're looking at ahead to the West Indies series, Sibley probably will be recalled back into that. I doubt Pope will be in there. Lawrence probably won't get a go. Bess probably won't get a go. Crawley will probably open. But how on earth have we got to this stage? And I just look at the environment. That Ollie Pope story says a lot. No young batsman should ever feel like that. They have to have more confidence and backing from the coaches because they are such an integral part of the dressing room culture. And I think back again, this is not just the series. This is not just a knee-jerk reaction or an out-there statement. I think back to 2021 in Ahmedabad, when Dom Bess was publicly hung out to dry. I think back to Lords in the India series, when Dom Sibley, he's walking out onto the hallowed turf of Lords. He's playing for England. He loves batting. I've never seen Dom Sibley not enjoy himself when he's out in the middle. And yet on that day, he looked like the most disconsolate human being in that stadium. He looked like a shadow of himself. And I just wonder if the environment that these England players are playing in at the moment is suitable. Because for all intents and purposes, it seems a little bit toxic, if I'm being honest. And Joe, I'd love to know your thoughts on this in terms of the management and who is culpable of that? You know, who's responsible for that dressing room ethos, the environment, the ecosystem that this England side have currently got in the test team?
Yeah, obviously, I don't think it's... Like, for me, Chris Silverwood should not be the England head coach, even, like, going into the West Indies tour. Like, just put anybody in charge as an interim and then, you know, bring in someone for the summer. I know Gary Kirsten has been keen on the job. I don't know if England would, like, make the smart choice and appoint him. But he's a good coach. He's a really good football coach. For me, and I've said this to you before, and there's never in a million years he's going to take the job. And never in a million years would England offer him the job. But for me, Ricky Ponting is the ideal coach. And as I say, this is the most unrealistic claim. But for me, he's such a student of the game. And he does those little analysis things on Instagram. I don't know if you've seen them. But they're really good. And, you know, he's just such a... He's coached Delhi Daredevils to be pretty successful in the IPL. And, you know, I just think he's... For me, one of the best coaches in the world, and as I say, it's completely unrealistic. It's never going to happen. But I just like to just put that out there. That kind of someone in that mold, and maybe England get a red ball coach and a white ball coach. I don't know. personally for me, I would do that. A problem with England in recent years, even under Trevor Bayliss for a little bit, was everything went into white ball cricket. Everything was like, right, we lost the World Cup in 2015, we're going to win the World Cup in 2019. And I'll say we lost the World Cup, we crashed out of the group stages in 2015, we're going to win the World Cup in 2019, and they did. Everything went into white ball cricket. They set world records, and T20 cricket as well, they were really good. You know, they set world records, they broke world records, and they built up this incredible squad. And it kind of felt like the test team kind of got a bit like neglected, really. And I just think it's important to kind of like know your red ball coach or your white ball coach, your kind of have their own thinking. All right, I don't know who the white ball coach would be off the top of my head. I can't think of anyone. But I think it's important to kind of have differentiation between each format going forward. And obviously, there are other sides who don't do this. Australia, for example, don't. They're really successful in both, but they've got a really good coach. Justin Lang is a good coach. I know he's had tough times, but he's won two Ashes series now and a World Cup and a World T20. He's a really, really good coach. So, yeah, I think genuinely that's the best thing for England to do. And as I say, I don't see Silverwood taking charge of the Tour of the West Indies. I don't think he should. I don't think he really has any credentials to go off. And I know he won the County Championship with Essex, and you know that's all well and good. But county cricket is one thing. Test and Ashes series of all things is a whole different beast. And you know, like you could pick any county coach and put him in who's won the County Championship. You know, why not? Because if that's if they're going to keep Chris Silverwood, then they may as well just do that. So yeah, I don't think he should. And on your point about maybe the environment not being almost being a bit toxic, really, what they did to Don Best, to publicly shame him like that was like an awful thing to do. And they did a similar thing to Moeen Ali, really, as well. I know we're talking about younger players, but they still did it to Moeen Ali. Dom Sibley, you mentioned, as you say, personally for me, I don't think he should be opening the batting yet for England. I think in the future, for sure, he could be. But right now, I've not seen him bat for however long, so I don't know what technical stuff he's worked on.
He looks a lot better.
Yeah,
he looks a lot better. In particular, can I just say, we'll probably pick this conversation up in a little bit, but Dom Sibley has definitely worked very hard, in particular against spin. And you should have seen that firsthand when he switched Parkinson for six.
I hope he gets a lot of runs in the West Indies. He probably will go. For me, I'll need to see him, and then I'll kind of make my decision. But I really hope he scores a lot of runs for England, because he's only young and he could be a test opener for years. But anyway, back to that in a bit. You know, the environment does seem toxic to me. It really does. And I don't think you can necessarily get away with that. And as you say, I didn't actually know that about Ollie Pope. I didn't actually know that. The fact that that happened, and he was dropped obviously for, well, one test, but obviously he had to come back in, and he kept in the Sydney, didn't he?
And he did well, for sure.
Considering he's kept in a handful of first-class matches before. You know, the fact that they can kind of, that is what it's led to, is really, really like, well, it was shocking to me to hear that just then, because it's the first time I've heard it. So yeah, the environment seems toxic. It does, and maybe not from a player, like teammates perspective, maybe from a coach-player relationship perspective, it seems a bit toxic. And I don't see how Silver. I don't think as I'd like to stand on personally, Silver, but I don't see how he can continue as the head coach of England. And for me, it's 100% time for a change, and they almost need a complete kind of like cultural, which I don't really like this phrase.
Reset.
Like cultural reset, cultural rebuild. Yeah, for sure. And Australia kind of did that after the whole, you know, sandpaper gate. Let's not get into that, but they kind of did that. Obviously, they brought in Tim Payne. Obviously, he's no longer the captain anymore. That's Pat Cummins now. And, you know, they've kind of kept that continuity, though, as Payne, Cummins and those kind of guys in that kind of like leadership group. And obviously, they brought Smith and Warner back into the fold now. And as I said, that's a whole separate issue. But Australia had a cultural reset, basically. I think you could tell that actually during this series as well. It seemed a lot friendlier. There wasn't really, and whether that's good or bad, I don't know. I honestly do not know, but there wasn't really that kind of like
the edge.
Not hatred. That's the wrong word, but yeah, the edge kind of on the series.
Intensity, rivalry, whatever you want to call it.
Definitely. Hatred is a very extreme way of putting it, But you get my point. There wasn't really that the in spice. The series. Yeah. And I think that even going back to the 2019 Ashes, they all shared a drink in the dressing room at the end of the test. You know, you have players off on opposing teams, you know, going out for a few drinks in at the end of this series, and that would not have happened in the Ward, McGrath, Ponting days, Gilchrist days. I don't think that would have happened then at all. So whether that's better or worse, I don't know. For off on the field, it's probably worse because it's not really that much drive. Off field, I don't really care. Do whatever you want as long as you're not doing anything dodgy. You know, as long as you're following the law, then do whatever you want. But yeah, I don't know. Who knows? I just think England need a whole kind of cultural reset, and there is certainly a lot of work to be done. I'll say that.
There most certainly is. And to be honest, Joe, I'd agree with that. I think in terms of the whole coaching position, I think Silverwood's time is up, personally speaking. You know, we've had our criticisms, we've had our complaints. And again, that is purely from a critting perspective, because for all intents and purposes, from what I've heard from people who have met Silverwood, from players who played under him, he's been a fantastic coach and he's a lovely person off the field. But the performances are just not up to standard. If England are to turn their fortunes around, we need a really strong coach. Look at Andy Flower when he took over. That was an England team which was languishing a bit in, I think, sixth or seventh in the ICC test rankings, and he completely turned things around. And we talk about the environment, and yes, arguably Andy Flower, the environment that ended on in 2013, again, probably could be...
It wasn't ideal, but overall, though. That was but overall.
In the early years, it was.
I feel like I was falling off of your point. I don't think there's ever been that kind of... Like, during Andy Flower in the early years, it was nice, you know? It really was. And
apart from when he dropped Ian Bell.
Of course, yeah.
He dropped him straight away, and that kind of set the standard of what his reign was going to be like.
Yeah, and I don't feel like that's ever really been there for England, like right now. I don't really see, you know, even in training pictures and stuff, training videos, you don't see them like absolutely loving it. I think maybe this is me being quite stupid to say this, but I don't think that even like taking football away from warm-ups, you know, it's just 10, 15 minutes of fun. And like players love doing that, and it's getting really competitive, and then it's just a bit of a laugh. And players love doing that. And even taking that away from warm-ups, and I know it's for safety and Rory Burns got injured and everything, but it is what it is. Like, at the end of the day, you're going to play professional cricket, so you're always risking getting a serious injury. You're always risking getting hit in, you know, breaking an arm or breaking a bone or something. I mean, look at Joe Root in that series, you know. So I just think that the whole environment, certainly now, is toxic, and it wouldn't do anyone any harm if 10 new players went to the West Indies, because, you know, just maybe not that many, but you get my point. If there was kind of new blood in the squad, 10 was an exaggeration. All right. If there's new blood in the squad, I don't think that would do anyone any harm.
We need some fresh faces, definitely. I think unquestionable heading into this West Indies tour. But again, what I just noticed with this England team, and to be fair, this is arguably for longer than just Silverwood's reign, but when we're doing well, everyone backs them. We all say, oh, they're one of the best teams on the planet, this, that, the other. They're all supporting each other. They're all, you know, they've all got the backing. At the first sign of adversity, and I don't see why this happens, and it happens with the players, the coaches, the fans, the board, everyone, we have a blame culture in this country, which I think goes way too far sometimes. And
it happens in not just sport as well. It happens in everything.
Oh, no. Exactly. But the key thing here, and a learning lesson that has got to be taken away from this series, is accountability. One thing that I've noticed, that I've picked up on, and this isn't just from Roots or Silverwood or the ECB, who again have been pretty silent when it comes to this whole series, or coaches and players in that side, there seems to be this passing of the blame. No one's quite accepting that their own individual actions have led to this result. It's almost as though it's someone else's fault. It's someone else's fault. Definitely. You are playing professional sports. You are responsible for your actions. And this is where the conversation of county cricket comes into it, because we talk about, oh, they were the best team. And Joe Root said that England are playing test cricket in spite of county cricket, not because of it. Now, that's something which, again, very controversial, people have their opinions on. But no matter how good your domestic circuit is, you can have the best coaches, you can have the best pitches, the best ball, you can have the strongest squads in domestic cricket. You can be the forefront of global domestic cricket. If you decide to go out there and gift away your wickets by flinging the bat out on a ball which is on a fifth or sixth stump line, you cannot blame the domestic circuit for that. That is an application issue, as opposed to technique even, or issues back home here in England and Wales. You are responsible for your actions. And this is something which I don't understand why someone in that squad, or the coach, or someone at the ECB just cannot go out there and say, you know what, I messed up. And I think England fans would appreciate that.
For sure. That's, I actually noticed that. I know I'm not blaming, but I'm going to use Silva as an example here. I noticed that from his interviews. He kind of tended to shift the blame from him as well, or kind of like seemed to almost not really say it how it is. Not lie, but not say it how it is, just to kind of protect himself. And I don't like that. At the end of the day, if you make a mistake, you have to admit you've made a mistake in anything in life.
And we move on.
Exactly. And then
it's not held against you. And that's something, again, when it comes to that cultural shift
in sport,
that's needed.
That's everybody makes mistakes in sport. At whatever level, you're going to make a mistake at some point in your life. Everybody has done it. And, you know, some people will say, you know, will find an excuse or whatever, or shift the blame. Or some people will say, you know, this was a mistake. This was not what I meant to do. Or this was wrong of me or whatever. So, yeah, I think it's not good. It's not good, the coaching system right now and everything like that is not good.
No, I'd agree, Joe. And again, as I keep on coming back to the lessons to take away from this series, just hold yourself accountable now and again. You know, people are not going to hold this against these players for the rest of their lives. It's cricket. It's life. We move on, right? It's not the end of the world, is it, in any way, shape or form? So that's just something I desperately want to see. I'm fed up in English cricket of passing the buck to another player, to coaches, to the selectors when it was Ed Smith, to the county circuit. You know, just acknowledge you've made mistakes when you made them and move on. And we can improve, you know. Again, it's not the end of the world. So that's just something I want to see when it comes to England heading into the future. And Joe, talking of the future, to wrap up today's podcast then, there's another prevalent question, isn't there? Where do we go from here? We've mentioned already, we want to see fresh faces. We want to see potentially a new captain at some point in the future, unless Joe Root can turn this around, and he'll probably have time to do so. He's got the backing of the England and Wales Cricket Board. We've discussed the thoughts about a new coach. Where from here, in terms of the West Indies series and the rest of the year and 2023, when Australia coming here for the Ashes, where does the England men's Test cricket team go from here?
Yeah, well, as I said earlier, you know, I think 100% they need fresh faces. I want to see at least two new spinners in there. I would love to see a Matt Critchley or William Livingston or someone like that, as I said earlier, in there. And then I want to see nobody's undroppable at the end of the day. Nobody's undroppable. And I want to see the ability to drop people as well. Because unless it's someone like Rory Burns, who horribly fell out of favour, as you said earlier, there's certain players. As I used the example of Josh Butler before. He should have been dropped for that last test, whether he'd gone home or not. You know, whether he got injured or not, he should have been dropped, in my opinion. So, you know, I want to see people be dropped, and I want to see change if change is necessary. If change isn't necessary, then don't make a change. But that's what drove me mad about Broad and Anderson, is that, you know, they didn't play Anderson in that last test. Why? There's not another test for months now. If he gets injured, then hopefully he doesn't anyway. But if he does, hopefully he's not a bad one and he'll be okay. Tiredness isn't an issue because, as I say, he's not going to play cricket for months. So, or not going to play a test match for months. So don't change something that doesn't need to be changed at the end of the day. You know, Mark Wood, unless he is feeling himself unfit, unless he goes to someone and says, I do not feel fit enough to play, then don't, because that's, I've never got the impression that Wood always wants to play cricket. That's the impression that I've got. You know, I'm never under the impression that Wood cannot play back-to-back tests, because they've never said that. So to me, it's always they decided to drop Wood because they feel he needs a rest rather than Wood says he feels a need a rest. As far as I know, that's the case. So unless somebody goes to you and says, I can't play this test, I'm not fit enough. I'm a fastball, I need to look after my body. Fair enough. Don't play him. Unless that happens, play him. You pick your best team. So I want to see the best players, because that was not the best 18 players in county cricket playing that. Or certainly the best red ball players in county cricket. That was not a chance. So I want to see actual good red ball cricketers in the squad. And I want to see people getting dropped if they need to be dropped. And no more of this stupid fast bowler rotation policy. If Anderson is 39 and he's still playing test cricket, he's clearly fit enough to play a 5-test series. Unless he genuinely himself says, then to me he's fit enough to play at least 4 of those 5 tests, maybe rest in 1. So I want to see actual red ball players who deserve to be picked and who have a sound technique and who score runs consistently and who take wickets consistently. And I want to see an actual fair selection policy for me.
Well, that's important as well. Selection. It is a major theme of this Ashes defeat. I do think the selection was wrong. Again, it's very easy with the power of hindsight, but that is definitely a shortcoming when it comes to this series. Joe, we have to end on what arguably might be the most controversial part of the podcast. We mentioned about where do we go from here in terms of the team, in terms of the coaches. There is another argument, isn't there, which has arrived off the back of this 4-0 and always does when England lose the Ashes. It's funny that it wasn't here after the New Zealand loss or the India loss in the summer. But the county circuit, we've seen some rather prominent voices who are advocating for the championship to be slimmed down, shall we say, removing the first-class status of 8 or so counties having a 100-style franchise red ball system in this country.
I would not get rid of counties. I would not. I would certainly consider doing this route 100%, because I think you have to evaluate all your options, right? And you know, you're gonna get some people who are just like you, I assume, who are just like absolutely not a chance. Some people like Kevin Peterson, who I assume is like, do this, this is the way forward. I'm kind of in the middle of that. I think it's certainly something that should be considered and maybe something that should be mapped out. And look, if this is genuinely something that is going to improve English cricket and the standard of English cricket, then maybe it's something that should be seriously looked at. But if it's something that's just going to kind of be a moneymaker and isn't going to really improve anything, then don't bother. But I definitely think if this, let's just hypothetically say this was to happen, then I don't think it would be the end of the counties. I don't think they would lose first-class status, whatever. I think there would just be a step up from county cricket. So I think, you know, you keep your county tournament, even forget white ball, but you keep your red ball county championship tournament, there'd be a step up, like a franchise, let's say, personally for me, I would make it 6 to 8 teams. And, you know, I would say it is the best of the best. You know, they play each other, and that's how you pick your test squad. And you can move.
Where do you fit it in, though? That's the problem. Because that was actually Kevin Peterson's, objective, I suppose, or his proposal. That's the word I'm trying to get at. His proposal was that we could reduce the counties, but his proposal was that they have 8 to 10 first-class teams, and it's a step up from county cricket. So it'd be a case of you've got England Lions, this theoretical tournament, I suppose, then county cricket would be fourth tier, basically, as opposed to third tier, which it is now. The only issue that I have with that is that, you know, with county members, if you were to take away a number of championship games, if you were to make their teams even weaker, just look at the reaction when it comes to the Royal London One Day Cup this year, when it came to players not being available, they went and played in the 100. You saw the visceral reaction that a lot of long-term members had. I don't see the plausibility of it. And again, in theory, it sounds fantastic.
That's the one thing that I would say is getting people behind it. But, you know, okay, so I don't know how they would do it. They'd probably do it in regions. I'd imagine it's similar to how they do it in Australia with, you know, New South Wales, Victoria, that kind of thing. Maybe they'd do it like the North, South, Midlands, East, West, and then Wales. I don't know. Something like that. I've thought about that on the spot. So probably not the best structurally or logistically, but yeah, I think that'd be the toughest thing. But you know, imagine you've got the best, you can really sound out who is genuinely good enough to get into the England side. Because if you've got someone who looks good at county level and scores a few hundred runs, or a bit more than that, and averages, you know, in the 40s for a season and gets in the test side, he could look really out of his depth. You know, it's kind of, maybe the quality in county cricket's kind of watered down a little bit because there's so many teams. I don't know. Maybe that kind of changes how, you know, with this kind of proposed franchise system, if you're literally playing against the best bowling attack possible, then that kind of, you know, weeds out the maybe people who are less suited to playing test cricket. And I'm not, you know, I'm not necessarily agreeing with that. I'm merely suggesting that's the case. I'm not, by the way, I'm not agreeing with any of this necessarily. I'm just saying it's something that should be certainly looked at, because I think you have to evaluate all your options for sure. And I'm not also saying get rid of the county championship, because it is part of a sporting, it's a sporting historical competition in England, just generally. And you wouldn't really rip that up necessarily or get rid of it. Certainly keep that. Whatever happens, keep that. Either way, I don't think it looks good for the 100, because I don't think that the 100 really has a leg to stand on anymore. Let's say England's performances in one-day cricket started to decline in the next, well, between now and the World Cup, in however many years. It's only next year, is it? Or is it the year after?
It's next year in India.
That's next year. That's coming up very quick. Yeah, that's coming up very quick.
Yeah.
I just have to try and
press. We're still world champions, though.
We are. So, yeah. So, let's say, like, this summer, next summer, you know, the performances start to decline in one-day cricket, then, you know, like, I don't think the 100 has a leg to stand on really anymore. And it's a money-making thing. And it also has the best, technically the best cricketers, the best white ball cricketers. Half of them aren't even there because he played test cricket, which is another issue. So, yeah, I don't think the 100 has much of a chance. Maybe they keep the teams, maybe they change them. I don't think you get many people turning up to watch teams who's, you know, sponsored by fast food playing Red Bull cricket. Maybe you'd have to change that as well. But you get my point. I don't think the 100 can last that much longer. Maybe this season it'll be played again, and then only time will tell. Whatever happens, these changes aren't going to be made this year. The only reason these changes might be made this year, they still not released county fixtures. So maybe something's happening.
No, it's not happening. They're coming out in 2 days. We're recording this, by the way, listeners, on the 18th. So if any other information does come out in the meantime, that is why. But just in the essence of fairness, because I think my views on the 100s are crystal clear. I made it clear on the podcast. I made it clear on other podcasts, radio appearances, YouTube, whatever. It's not my thing. But at the same time, with anything in life, every single thing like this, every controversial topic, opinion, tournament, if it's sport, has positives and negatives. It does have positives as well. We're not going to get into the 100 argument here because, again, it hasn't been a direct factor in this particular series defeat, but you can definitely argue about the ECB scheduling and the neglect of Red Bull cricket in order to shoehorn it into an already congested domestic fixture. That is definitely an argument which could be had when it comes to the 100 in the years which have, you know, come before it. The issue, though, with the 100 is that we already have an incredibly congested domestic schedule here in England and Wales. We don't have the luxury of, like, India, where they have their own window for the IPL. We don't have that in this country, and we can't because we have the British weather. It rains, it gets cold, it's not exactly ideal cricketing conditions in the best of times. But the fact is, adding in this fourth tournament, if there was to be a best of the best of county cricket, it goes on for 2 to 3, 4 weeks, whatever, in the height of summer, I just don't see how it'd be feasible. I don't see how we could have not just four tournaments, that'd be a fifth tournament now. Heading into the mix, I mean, people are already saying
it's on top of the county championship. You put the county championship in the middle of summer, you put that in the middle of summer, you just play them on top of each other. Because
how can you play in the middle of summer? That's my other question. That's the 100's real estate.
But that's what I'm saying, though. That's what I'm saying. The 100 doesn't have a leg to stand on.
Where does the championship
come in? At the
end
of the day, because nobody else in the world plays 100 ball cricket, right? It's a bit of fun. To some people, to you, I know you don't really care for it, but you know, it's
just to clarify that, I don't care about the men's tournament. I think the women's tournament actually has a lot of promise. It attracted new demographic. Sure. If you look at the figures of the live stream, the TV audiences, I think it could be an excellent catalyst for the women's game in this country. But with the men's game, where we have an established T20 competition, which is one of the strongest in the world, whether people want to admit it or not, it's produced a number one ranked side. It's produced a World Cup winning team in 2010. It's produced a side which reached the final in 2016 and the semis in 2021. We already have that established competition. I just feel as though with the men's game, it's an unnecessary addition into what is already a very congested schedule. And when it comes to this Red Bull tournament, the best of the best,
but it's
it
not
would
just
have to be one or the other.
It is. That's what I'm saying. Like at the end of that, that's like I say, nobody else in the world plays 100 ball cricket, right? Nobody plays that. So sack it off. Like you say, if they're that desperate to get a franchise tournament, they can franchise the T20s. That would be a completely stupid thing to do. But if they're genuinely that desperate, at least keep it 2020 cricket, right? So, you know, to sack off the 100 and move a large portion of the county championship to the summer and play this Red Ball, I suppose it is a tournament then, in that case, play this Red Ball tournament, I realise that. Play this Red Ball tournament, like on top of the at the same time as the county championship. They both run at the same time, they both played at the same time, and then you're going to get people still developing because county cricket, you're going to get a lot more young players playing, still against good players, but then you're going to get the absolute best who can be picked to play Test cricket for England, to play Test cricket for England, are playing against the absolute best. You know, you'll get your like the likes of Tom Abel. He will be playing in this franchise tournament. You know, these Saki Mahmood, your Matt Parkinson's, these
Tom Haynes.
Yeah, exactly. You'll get these kind of players playing in this tournament, and they are the absolute best. Factually, they are the best. You know, so this is what that tournament will improve. And then maybe you do say to players like Josh Butler, just play white ball cricket and just become even better at white ball cricket and get more runs and take more catches and stumpings and everything like that. And become even better at white ball cricket and just really, really honing on getting the best of the best at Red Bull cricket. But hey, I don't know. Certainly something that ECB should think about, if anything. You know, even if it's just purely a hypothetical idea or purely a like dream almost, think about it. Because at the end of the day, the worst I can do by thinking about it is it doesn't happen. So the best case scenario is if they had decided to do it, England become the greatest test side of all time. So that's the best case scenario.
Sounds very easy
quite
in theory.
Easy. Yeah, it's easy. It's easy. But cricket's an easy game.
In practice, it turns out very differently. And for those wanting to know more about franchise Red Bull cricket, look at the example of South Africa. Because South Africa went from a provincial system, which, funnily enough, in 2021, they've gone back to, which says a lot about the success of the franchise system in South Africa. Although it was producing outstanding players, the likes of Graham Smith, AB de Villiers, Hashim Amla, we can keep on going. So many. JP Duminy, Philander Morkel, ridiculous side in the early 2010s, which was produced by this six-team franchise system. But there were other factors at play. And if you look at participation numbers in South Africa, if you look at the crowds as well, I know people go in on county crowds and they look at the championship and they go, oh, it's only one man and his dog. If you look across all three tournaments, we have got one of the best supported domestic circuits on the planet. Far exceeds that of the Sheffield Shield, the Plunkett Shield in New Zealand, even Ranji Trophy games. You'll see more people watching a Somerset game in Taunton than you will at a Mumbai game. At the Vankade, that is just how it works. We've got a really well-supported domestic circuit in this country. So I think it's pretty obvious when it comes to our thoughts, Joe. I'm personally not in favour of, obviously, not reducing counties. I'll make that incredibly clear every single podcast.
Oh, yeah, I don't want to reduce counties. I don't want to
water down. We'll do a special episode on that, though.
Counties, yeah.
We'll do a special on that.
I'm not saying I want to get rid of counties. Like that's obviously
it's just hypothetical, and again, it's important to have these conversations because we go back onto that reoccurring theme, don't we? Cricket is subjective. We have an opinion, I have an opinion, Joe, you have an opinion, the listener will have an opinion, Tom Harrison will have an opinion, Silverwood, Root. The game is based off of opinion. There is no right answer. But the key thing now when it comes to England, we need clarity, We need leadership. We need direction. And whatever that direction is, we need a strong leader to come in and really take the reins, whether that's a coach, a new captain, whether that is the new CEO of the England Wales Cricket Board. I'm not holding my breath for that, though, to be honest, when it comes to the ECB. I think their recent actions have proved otherwise in that regard. But we need direction now. This is a chance. Tom Harrison did say that, in fairness. But the fact is, this should have happened many a year ago. And we'll just have to wait and see whether or not the words can be backed up with some action. But again, we'll follow this up with another podcast. I'm aware we've been going on for 90 minutes, listeners. Thank you very much for taking all of the time. So, Joe, before we just wrap up, conclude today's episode, just any final words, really, about, in particular, the Under-19 World Cup, which England have been excelling in, and also the Women's Ashes. Just some words of encouragement for those two teams.
Yeah, come on, win them both.
Yeah, we need it, don't we?
Good luck. Yeah, we do. We do.
Yeah, we most certainly do. But yes, wishing all the very best of luck. First of all, to the women's team, who are going to be competing in the Women's Ashes. That'll be a really interesting, very interesting series, that obviously across formats. There has been a little bit of a scheduling change. For those who want to see an update on that, I'm pretty sure you can see it on the Cricketer, or I think it might be updated on Crick Info now. So have a look at the schedule again for those wanting some late nights, early mornings. That will be absolutely ideal for you. And fingers crossed that the ladies can have a lot more success than the lads did in their series. And then with the Under-19 World Cup as well, great start the other day, beating the defending champions Bangladesh. Just to each and every single one of those lads, they're an incredibly talented, very exciting, entertaining group that we've got in the Caribbean right now. Just wishing them all the very best of luck as well. And more importantly, just enjoy yourselves. You only usually get one Under-19 World Cup. It's an amazing experience. You get to put your name up in those proverbial lights. You get to put it on a more international stage. Go out there, enjoy it, have a smile on your face. And no matter what happens with that series, or that tournament, I should say, we'll be proud. We'll be incredibly proud of those young Lions when they come back from the West Indies. But Joe, I think that is a pretty apt place to wrap up what's been a bumper episode of the Counts Cricket Podcast today. Just one final thing for all you listeners out there. We do now have a Patreon page. It costs roughly £1 a month. There's no obligation to join it, but it just helps us with regards to our production fees and our hosting costs for the podcast. So if that's something that you are able to help out with, the link to that is in the podcast description below. We'd be incredibly grateful for any support with that. But that is pretty much it from us two here at the Counts Cricket Podcast for today's episode. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.